Accession number 11912, Reel 2.
Mr. Eason, Reel 2, you were just telling me the story of this incident in the convoy in the Atlantic in the winter of 39-40.
Yes, the radar picked up an object. It was coming up towards dusk. Picked up this object on a bearing. I can't remember the bearing or direction. All I know is that it was extremely cold. And in the northern part of the Atlantic. We asked the convoy commodore for permission to leave the convoy and investigate this object on the surface, which he did. We left the convoy, headed towards the object, and eventually we reached it. And it turned out to be a sea boat, or a lifeboat, from a merchant ship. And there was a number of people sat there without any slight movement amongst them. And it was obvious that they had all died. Just sat there, frozen stiff. And we wondered what they were going to do about this, because if we were going home, we might have picked them up and taken them home with us. But it was on a convoy which was on an outward journey, which we obviously couldn't have that number of dead bodies on board. So we just left it and pushed it away.
Did they discover which ship it was?
Well, yes, they did, but I can't remember which ship it was at that time. I probably knew the name at the time, but you quickly forget these things when other trouble spots turn up.
Any other incidents you can remember on the Kashmir when you had these duties in northern waters?
Well, we had to go to Norway. And we picked up the Cossack. We were coming round in the north of Scotland and picked up with the Cossack, who was also headed towards Norway. And I don't have to tell you, really, I suppose, what they intended to do, and that was to try and save these merchantmen on the... We were covering force for the Cossack. And during the night, the Calvin, HMS Calvin, one of her own units, was a mishap. And whose fault it was, I don't know, but she carved across our stern and took the quarter off the ship, the starboard quarter off the ship, all the cabins down that row, and a young doctor, a young Scotch doctor, was lost.
So, and that happened when you were doing this work covering for HMS Cossack?
That's right, yes.
When it was going in for the Altmark?
That's right. There's probably lots of other little things coming on, but you got to. It's only the things that really stand out. However, we were able to steam. I was still in my hammock. I was watched below, and all the doors were shut. I was shut inside as well. That's just the rules, whether you're inside or out. They close them if it's to save the ship, and. When I woke up, I felt a funny motion on the ship. She was just rocking. And I went and opened up the door, and there was a bellow outside, keep that bloody door shut. So I went through anyway and came out and said, "What's up?" He said, "We've been rammed by the Calvin." So there was two ships. One was going forward very gently, the other one was going in reverse. We had to go in reverse. No, the Calvin did, because of a bows. And there was a submarine attack on us even then, because of both the ships. Anyway, we found our way back to Lerwick. That's in the Orkney Islands, isn't it? Where they patched her up with concrete. And we came back on one propeller. Just one propeller had bent.
Did the Kashmir take any part in the Norway campaign in April?
We had done previous to that was escorting other ships and back, but not a lot of it. Not a lot of it. It was a few weeks, that's all. But we came back to Tyneside to be repaired, and they took us in there to, because a whole quarter of the deck was gone, and it looked at first as though we were going to lose our ship's company, because it looked rather a lot of work to do, and it broke our hearts, because we thought we was going to lose her and go on other ships split up. But after a while, the Captain D, that was Main Batten, he wouldn't have that at all. He says, we'll keep the men, they've worked up crew and they're fine crew. So they send us on leave in turns, which was a godsend to us. Hard way to get it, though.
What did people in the Navy think of Mountbatten?
I don't know what the people in the rest of the Navy thought about him, but the people that worked with him was a bloody fine seaman. A magnificent navigator. I know there's been stories about relations of his who've written. I don't know, you'll have to watch me with this. But recent years said that he was a poor seaman and all the rest of this is totally untrue. And I don't know why they criticise this man like this, because we was with him. And when you're travelling around, as we were, around the Crete and the Greek islands, and there's hundreds and hundreds of them, and we picked our way through all of them without coming to grief, and it really must have been something.
Did you actually meet him?
Oh, yes. We all met him when after we were sunk, what was left of us, you know, in the big shed in Alex on the jetty there. I forget the name of the big depot ship we went to, because they cleaned us all up because we was covered in oil. And he met us and spoke to us.
What impression did he make on you?
Beg pardon?
What impression did he make on you?
Bloody arrogant. Yes, he was. He was absolutely arrogant. But it's been said before that he'd get you into all sorts of bother, but he's a better man, you have to get you out of them, you know. The words to that effect.
How is he arrogant? You mean he gave the impression of thinking a lot about himself?
No, not himself. Not himself. But what he was, I suppose. His rank. And it's something hard to divine, you know, in a man like him. Because one minute he could be most gentlest type you wish, another one would be just as bloody hard. So it's a job to tell what sort of man he was. All I know is that it was a job to be done. We did it, regardless. We did it.
Now, you've been telling me about the duties of the Kashmir in the Atlantic and off Norway. What do you remember happening next to the ship?
Well, after we come down from... We went back on the convoys again for quite a while, and the Atlantic, and also up the east coast of England in the east coast convoys. Then we came back to Portsmouth again, and we had a scrap with German destroyers in the channel.
Can you describe that as
yes,
you remember
I can.
It?
Yes, I can. These the fishing boats in small craft were being harassed by a flotilla of German destroyers from the French side. And so they sent the 5th flotilla out. It was nearly all there at that time, which was very unusual, usually split up. And we come across, during the night, we was going right over towards Cherbourg, it's close to Cherbourg, which don't take long from Portsmouth. And on the way back, we saw flashes and a ship burning on the horizon, and then we'd caught the Germans shelling our fishing fleet, or trawlers fishing. They had no idea we were a bait. They were too busy in what they were doing, and we caught them more or less with their trousers down. And we went into a torpedo attack. And we went into a torpedo attack on them. Well, they fired at us and we fired at them, and then they disappeared. Well, just before daybreak, we picked them up again, still heading towards the French coast. They were trying to avoid us, and we were hunting for them. And we come across them again, and this time it wasn't daylight. It's just daybreak on the horizon. It was a little bit of light about. And we fired torpedoes, and they fired torpedoes at us. We hit one of them and set it on fire and assume it has sunk and damaged the others. And they caught Javelin with a torpedo in the bows and one in the stern. And but she didn't sink, so we took her into tow. She was completely cut off from the bows to the front of the bridge. And from the after searchlight platform to the stern, it was all gone.
Was the Kashmir damaged at all?
None, not at all. I don't think any other ships were either, except Javelin.
What damage was inflicted on the Germans? Could you tell?
No, you couldn't tell. A fire at sea could look terrible. By the time you get in, it was just smoke mostly. It's very difficult. But they claimed it as sunk, and the Germans didn't deny it, so we assumed that it was sunk.
Do you know which month or season that was?
November 1940.
And it was in the Channel somewhere?
And it was, yes.
Do you know whereabouts roughly in the Channel?
Off the Isle of Wight. And heading towards the Cherbourg.
Did you say that to me earlier off the tape that the Kashmir bombarded Cherbourg?
Yes, it did.
Was that before or after this action?
The 30th of November.
Can you describe what happened as far as you recollect?
The bombardment. Well, we picked up the Ramillies and three cruisers and half dozen destroyers. We were the bombarding group, and there was another six destroyers and a group. No, the MTBs were also covering for the bombardment group, and there were six further destroyers as covering group. We came in, most of the ships were painted lilac at that time too, which was unusual, a lilac colour. And we came in out the mist, and if you remember, you get a low mist in the early morning and the sun coming up, it's got a lilac effect. And this is what we done. They came in out of this low cloud, or mist, and opened fire with the Ramillies flying over the top of us, the cruisers flying over the cruisers, and the cruisers over the top of us, and the MTBs guarding us from E-boat attack from shore. And it caught the Germans completely by surprise. We'd got a couple of aircraft up, dropping tinfoil over Cherbourg, and the Germans were going mad with their anti-aircraft guns, thinking they were being bombed. And in actual fact, we'd completed three-quarters of an hour bombardment and were turning away, actually steaming away, for the Germans woke up to the fact that it was coming from the sea and not from the air. We reached port safely without one shot, any damage whatsoever. The Germans were firing at us in boxes squared. So the area we were in was squared off for shelling. So as the shells dropped, so the old unit moved into where the shell had dropped. If the Germans had adopted an idea of suddenly doing the same place again, they'd probably have had some hits. But they didn't. And we escaped unscathed.
When did Kashmir leave from home waters for the Mediterranean?
Let me see, I don't think there was anything else in between there. That would be 1941.
After Christmas?
After Christmas, yes.
So you spent Christmas in Britain?
In Britain, yes, we did. And then we carried on with some convoy duties, and then we gathered together at Plymouth.
And when you say we, you mean the 5th Destroyer
Fleet? The 5th Destroyer Fleet. I always talk like that when I'm talking about the... even if there's only two. And we gathered together at Plymouth there, picked up an convoy heading to Gibraltar, and escorted that down to Gibraltar without too much, and then on into the Mediterranean. Into the Mediterranean and on towards Gibraltar, where we refueled and restored and headed out from there towards the Pantelleria Straits and onto Malta. We went straight through. Now, no ship had been through there for some considerable time. And just as we got to level, I suppose, to Pantelleria, you could just see it in the distance on a clear day, that the first of the attacks came. And they weren't... it must have been the Italians, because they weren't so desperately keen to come in too close. The torpedo bombers did, and mostly the high-level bombers. But as you could see those coming, and you could turn around and go back home before they reached you, so it was quite simple to miss those. And there was no German dive bombers there at that time, but their torpedo attacks were more effective than any of the high-level bombers. But we evaded those, and two or three were shot down. And we got passed right through safely and into Malta. But as we went into the harbour there, the Jersey struck a mine as she went into the harbour there and sank. That was after we'd passed, so there must have been magnetic. It allows some through and some not, you know, depending on their degaussing gear on board, if it's good. And we went into harbour and sent boats back out to assist with the Jersey. That's one of our... the J's and K's, you see. Well, it really takes something to try and remember things. It's 50...
We've looked up the record, and it was the 2nd of May 1941 that the Jersey was lost in the entrance to Grand Harbour, Malta.
That's right.
What do you remember next?
Well, we refuelled, stored again, and then set out towards the North African coast, down to, I forget the name of the bay, and Benghazi.
Bay of Sirte.
That's right. We were in company with Jackal, Kelly, Calvin and Kipling. And we proceeded to bombard Benghazi, with Ladybird bombarding Gazala North Landing Ground.
And this was the 11th of May 1941.
And this was the 11th of May 1941. Is that all right?
Yes. What do you remember about the bombardment of Benghazi?
It went off very well indeed. There was fire started in the harbour. There was two or three ships. We were that close in, we could see the ships burning. And they also bombed the other side of Benghazi itself, where German troops were lying, because that was where there was some reply with howitzers and things. but nothing much to bother us. We carried out, completed our attack and left. But soon after we left, the moon was shining and German Stuka bombers started to follow our wakes on the way back down through towards Alexandra. But they never, although there were some very close, we all escaped without any damage at all.
And then after that, what are your next memories?
Well, we went on from there to Alexandria and refueled and headed out towards Crete and to join up with the main fleet, the Mediterranean fleet. The following morning, we joined up with a convoy which was heading towards Malta. And as the days went past and we kept and we came into sight almost of Malta, when we come under very heavy air attack from Italian and German aircraft, mainly dive bombers, but the Italians with their high level bombing. A couple of ships was hit, quite a number of aircraft were shot down, and we had to sustain two attacks during the day, one just before dusk. Most of the ships escaped. There was a few damage from machine gunning from torpedoes, bombers. There's air raising experience. One plane came down between the two ships. We was behind HMS Kelly, and an aircraft crashed in between, and the chaps got up on top of the fuselage and waved. Well, not waved, they was asking to be picked up, of course, but there was no way that could happen. Until eventually we were told the Kashmir, Kelly and Kipling were told to leave the convoy and head to back to Crete. We'd been assigned a job of keeping the invasion of Crete by German forces to assist in this. We were the main ones there at the time. And this is what we did for 2 days. Coming up to the night of the 20th of May. And we come across several convoys, of which we, mostly cakes, I think that's pronunciation, that's the sailing, the big sailing ships, taking the short distance from, I forget the name, it begins with an H, and over to Crete itself. It's between the Crete and the mainland. Most of these were sunk. You could hear the screams of the men as the ships were sinking. They all had their fully booted and spurred and kitted up.
I think the Germans were quite bitter about our sinking of those kikes.
Yes, they were.
Do you think they had any justification for being bitter about it?
No, I don't see no reason. Why? I mean, they were there to be shot at, same as we were there to be bombed at. He could say the same thing to us. But they never give us any peace. Certainly they brought in extra aircraft from Greece to try and wipe us out, which they did, in a matter of fact, eventually. But I don't see no reason why they should be fed up about that. They were a threat to our troops ashore, and that's what we were there for, to stop it.
How many kikes do you think that the Kashmir might have intercepted?
Oh, it was almost impossible to say. They were burning as fast as we were hitting them, they were going on fire. They were only wood and canvas, most of them, you see.
So dozens?
Oh, yes, dozens. They lost a terrible amount of men. Not in only just us, but other units as well that were operating in the area. But we knew that we had to get out of the way before daybreak, or we'd catch it in the net. Because there's no way. We'd been firing for 10 days with our guns, one way and another. Benghazi, the convoy to Malta, and now this, where it's constant enemy action. We felt so sorry for these people, believe me, knowing that with their packs on, there's no way they were going to live. But what else, what other choice did we have? We'd have been shot ourselves if we'd have thought about pulling out. It was a terrible thing to say, but...
Was there any moon that night? Could you see very well?
Yes, there was a fair bit of moon. It was, I should say, about three-quarters moon. I shall always remember that, because the smoke and the flames and the noise was terrible. Having no engines, most of these cakes never had engines. They were sailing. Some had engines fitted, auxiliary engines fitted to them, but they didn't get very far.
Did they attempt to fire on the Kelly with small arms?
Well, they did. All of us did fire on all of us. Yeah, you could hear the bullets pinging off the side of the ship in the hull.
Did they hit anybody?
Not to my knowledge. Not on board Casimir, they didn't. They may have done on the other ships. We broke off. We had a signal from the... CNC to break off the engagement and return to Alexandria, which, if we'd have done this, I'm going to be very careful to say here, if we'd have done this, we would we've probably been have got back to Alexandria. But there was an ammunition ship and another ship that was heading in. Steamships, and we've been told to attack anything which is likely to be a danger to the troops ashore, and so we opened fire on and left them burning and exploding. They'd loaded up with ammunition, but that made us late leaving. We was there for about several hours more longer than we should have been, and we was only 17 miles off Crete on the southern side of Crete this time. We'd come round from Greece and heading towards Alexandria when the Italian high-level bombers turned up again. Well, as I said before, they were no problem really, unless they got lucky, because you could see them falling a long way away. And they were no problem. That attack happened about just before daybreak, about sixes, I suppose. And we went away, prepared our to the mess decks to prepare our meal for the dinner that day, potatoes and that, in case we were closed up. And then the alarm bells went again and we closed up. And this time it was different kettle of a fish, and there was masses of Stukas in formations of about eight each to attack the two ships. And most of our ammunition by that time was getting low, if it exhausted. On the 4-inch HA which I was firing, we'd completely run out of anti-aircraft ammunition, and we was firing just SAP, semi-armour piercing shells, at them. Just so they see the gun go bang, if you might get lucky to put one, a chance in a million of hitting an aircraft with a solid job. We were hit first, just forward of the bridge.